On this episode of Still Loading.
Oh, it's no use. I'll never fit into this pipe.
Nonsense. All you need is a little lubrication.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval, and today my buddy Dexter is back. Say hello, Dexter.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to more Captain N.
And yes, we are here to talk about the second episode in the series of Captain N, Season 1, Episode 2, released on September 16th, 1989, written by Jeffrey Scott. And this episode is called How's Bayou. The first episode, I don't even think we mentioned it. It was Kevin in Videoland, but not that it means much. So this episode is
as well. So
you're right. You're right. They put it right on. They put it right on the head. Put the whatever. I can't speak. Got it right on the head. What's that expression? Yes. Why can't I think of it right now?
On the head. Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say, and for some reason I just could not do it. The first thing that stuck out to me in this episode is the opening line from the narrator goes, Mother Brain is using her trillion brain cells to find Captain N's weakness. And if a trillion brain cells so far, like we've watched the first three episodes total so far in this. And if a trillion brain cells supplies her with these plans, I'm a little concerned because these plans are awful. Like they are legitimately just awful.
Yes. I think I demand a recount on brain cells.
So let's dive right into it, right? So that, like I said, that was the first thing that popped in my head. No, it's something else I paid attention to this time. The room that Kevin is in, like when he gets sucked into the video game in the intro, like what is the design that the production design, that's the word I was looking for. What were the production designers thinking when they were making this room? Because it is interesting. It's a combination of the most sparse and yet densely populated room I've ever seen, because his TV and his chair are in the center of the room with nothing else around it, but there's bookshelves and stuff hugging the walls, but like there's nothing else. It's just it in the center of the room. I don't see his bed at all. I mean, it could just be off camera, of course, but I don't see his bed at all. The other thing that weirded me out too, I shouldn't say weirded me out, but like I thought it was an odd choice to have checkerboard drapes around those windows. I thought that was an interesting, like a racing checker drapes. And then there's a random purple arrow or like lightning bolt that starts on the one side of the screen or the one on his one wall and then goes diagonally down and cuts to the other wall, and like it continues along the next wall. I was like, I can't picture a kid ever wanting his room painted like this.
Yeah, they definitely, like if you were to ask, you know, if someone asked you like what was 80s aesthetic, I think you could probably just take a snapshot of this room and show it to somebody. It's so like generic, and like you said, the black and white, it was just shapes, like neon colored shapes and lightning bolts and were they solo cups, Dixie cups, that like teal and purple?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's like a bizarre combination of 80s and 90s room aesthetics, I guess. Yes. And you get a better view of his room on this episode too, because Mother Brain's plan is trying to find some of Captain N's weaknesses, some of
Kevin's
weaknesses. And the thing that Mother Brain discovers is that he is playing what is supposed to be The Adventures of Bayou Billy. And the animation is not like in the opening scene, you see actual gameplay footage of Kevin playing Punch-Out.
Yeah.
But in this, instead of showing actual gameplay footage of Bayou Billy, they just show a cartoon version of Bayou Billy. Like, it's really weird cartoon version of a video game.
And it looks worse than what Bayou Billy looks like. It looks like Pitfall from Atari.
You're right. It definitely does. It just such a weird choice overall. Like, I didn't quite get that logic. But it's just such a weird idea where it's like, apparently his weakness is just an entire world, Bayou Land. Like, this whole thing is just...
In Mother Brain's defense, I think Bayou Billy is everyone's weakness, because if anyone can beat that game, then maybe they're the true game master, or they just have never played any other game but that.
Bayou Billy is one of those perfect examples of how the American versions of the games are a lot of times harder than the Japanese one, which is very much against that misconceived narrative that we kind of developed over the last decade or so in the gaming community. I feel like it's been dispelled a lot now, but for a long time, everyone always thought, you know, the Japanese have the harder versions of all the games, and that isn't really true. I mean, it does happen. Mega Man 2 is the perfect example. There's no easy mode in Mega Man 2 in Japan. Our hard mode is their normal mode. Is their only mode. So we got normal mode and hard mode in the States, and they just got... No, it was just one version. There's no different game difficulty modes. In any case, but Bayou Billy was probably one of the prime examples of a game where, to combat the rental market in the US, they made the game insanely difficult to discourage people from renting it. But what that did was just discourage people from buying it. So it didn't really... I mean, it's not like it sold poorly. Like, you can get a copy of Bayou Billy pretty cheap, but it still is not... It wasn't the big success that I think Konami wanted it to be, to be sure. Before we continue on with the story, what are your thoughts on this episode, Dex? Like, what was the vibe you got off of this?
This is how I definitely, you know, because it's been a long time since I've revisited this show as well, but this is how I kind of remember the show, as far as like tackling one game as the topic of the episode, like, hey, what about this game, or introducing like a character that Captain N joins with, or, you know, that kind of thing. The only thing that I felt was missing, which I know this is going to sound bad, but like, I wanted Kid Icarus and Mega Man. Like, they weren't involved, but
they were barely involved. They were in the beginning of the episode, and then that was it.
Yeah, another thing that I felt was weird, because right after she decides that Bayou Billy is Kevin's weakness, that she's like, okay, that's going to be my plot. Dr. Wily, who's now introduced as being one of her minions.
Not much of an introduction. She doesn't even say his name for like a portion. He just shows up, and then she's like, Dr. Wily.
That must have been something that wasn't in the pilot that they decided should be in the series after the fact, kind of thing. They just forgot to introduce him. But her plan is like, yes, now build me a robot cat. And it's like, wait, what? I think we missed some exposition here.
Eggplant Wizard's like, what about, like, I have an idea, Mother Brain, and like, it's a helicopter eggplant or something like that. And Mother Brain like takes the eggplant and sweet potato. It's like a robot sweet potato, and Mother Brain's like, oh, thank you, Eggplant Wizard. And then she destroys it in front of him, and it's like, now go get me a RoboCat.
Yeah. I think they missed something, because they end up using Duke as the way to coax Captain N into going to Bayou Billy's world, and like, I wonder if there was like a line missing or they forgot, but like, that would have made more sense. Like, no, here's what we're going to do. We're going to use Duke. Like, they should have mentioned Duke as another one of his weaknesses or something, that like, he cares for his dog kind of thing.
I think that would have been a better writing choice for sure. The way I watched it now, like, I didn't even think of it that way. I just thought like, well, that's a really roundabout way to get him into Bayou Land. Trick his dog into chasing that robotic cat, which, spoiler alert, I don't know why I'm even giving a spoiler alert for this show, but spoiler alert, that's what Mother Brain's big plan is, let me trick his dog Duke into chasing after this robot cat, because he even mentions, he after the cat kind of taunts Duke, Kevin is like, oh, he's been doing that to me ever since he was a kid. And he tells Princess Lana, like, I'm sorry that he chased after your cat. And she goes, I don't have a cat. And but we're before we continue, we're missing a big serious plot point in here, Dex. Princess Lana and Kevin having a dance off to the worst fake 80s music that actually was made in the 80s that I've ever heard. And one of the things I thought was weird, we talked last episode in our mini series about how there's like licensed music in this, and we don't get it in these cuts that we're seeing because of, you know, they were removed from DVDs and everything like that. You could only really see it when it came out live. So they had in the first episode was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly by Ennio Morricone. I butchered his name, but the spaghetti western guy, and then Shakedown by Bob Seger. This episode, somewhere in it, has Born on the Bayou by Creedence Clearwater Revival. Makes sense. Bayou Billy, Song of the Bayou. Right. But what I thought was weird is the next episode that we're going to talk about, and I'll bring it up again when we talk about episode 3. The featured song in that is Thriller by Michael Jackson. Well, in this episode, Kevin does a moonwalk in midair using his quote unquote Captain N powers, which of course is not explained in the slightest.
Yes, which makes me wonder if Michael Jackson had special Nintendo powers that we didn't know about. Like,
oh, he definitely did. He at least had Sega powers, so why not Nintendo?
That's true. Yes, but you don't still dance like that? I still dance like that.
If you notice, it's the exact same animation. That they're both doing the exact same dancing animation, just at different intervals, so it looks like they're not actually synced up. Well, they're not synced up, but so it looks like, it kind of makes it look like they're not doing the same dance. Something to note, we were talking about this off mic, there's a lot of parts in this episode where there's just missing scenes and missing backdrops and missing, like, lots of, like, there'll be random cuts where something will be happening and then all of a sudden you'll cut, and like, it seems like there is a lot of dialogue here that should have been here and they just deleted it all. The reason I'm bringing this up now instead of later, Dex, is because I'm looking at the notes on Wikipedia, and it has it in the note. The original airing of this episode was an unfinished version, which included some shots missing their backgrounds.
Yeah,
this explains a lot.
Yeah,
because especially when you do meet Bayou Billy, you first meet his pet alligator, but they're completely missing the scene that shows Bayou Billy rescuing Kevin from the pet alligator. But when you see the alligator, it's just an alligator on like a peach colored backdrop, and that's it.
Right. Yeah, I think both of the moments where the background are missing are like the big scenes with Bayou Billy's pet alligator. There's like no background. It's just, like you said, it's like a beige, tan, peach color, and just the animation of the alligator.
It's so weird. It's such a, like, yeah. Why would
they? And from what I understand, that's the same with the DVD, that they used the original broadcast version, which was missing those backgrounds, rather than the completed version that they used for syndication.
They're being authentic. They're being authentic. Yeah. That's what it is. So Mother Brain's big plan in this episode is to lure Kevin into Bayou Land by creating a robo cat that will then taunt Kevin's dog Duke into the warp zone, for Bioland, which will then cause Kevin to chase after Duke into Bioland. And that's how they're going to trap him, because he's apparently bad in Bioland, which sounds like another movie, Bad in Bioland. Like, I could totally picture that being like a crime drama from the 70s.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, that's the layout of that, or that's the setup for this episode. That is the overarching plot of it, as if you can call that a plot. what are some things that stuck out to you so far, though?
I would say that the speaking of sticking out, the transition of Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo being sent to go take.
Yes, to chase after Kevin into Bayou. Yeah. I'll let you go into more detail with that. That is the sound effect. The sound effect you heard at the beginning of this episode is clipped from the scene Dex is talking about right now. Continue, sir.
So to get into the warp for Bayou Land, where they are, is smaller of an opening than King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard can fit into. So there's a tossed salad joke and a lube joke. I would love everyone to experience this for free on YouTube. Check that part out.
I will include the audio of that whole scene.
I'm dancing around the jokes of this episode that I don't know if the creators intended to occur, but yeah, there's some.
Are you kidding me?
What's that?
I was like, no, are you kidding me? They definitely intended those jokes to occur. They're talking about lubrication and tossing salads. Okay, like there's no way that you could skate around that joke. Like I said, I will insert a clip of that whole scene, like the audio of that scene right here.
Oh, it's no use. I'll never fit into this pipe.
Nonsense. All you need is a little lubrication. Lettuce is green, tomatoes are red. Turn King Hippo into a salad head.
Hey, this ain't lubrication.
Into the pipe without any toil. Abracadabra, vinegar and oil.
Toss your salad. Vegetable!
And my mind is never the same.
I get, you know, Eggplant Wizard and vegetables. And like, as you see throughout the episode, throughout other episodes, like when he gets hit or like bumps into something or falls, like vegetables just kind of like...
like asparagus and shit just flies everywhere.
Exactly. Yes, it actually, funny enough, reminds me of Punch-Out with King Hippo, like especially in the newer version of Punch-Out when they get hit and then like stereotypical things fly out of them, you know, like Glass Joe being from France, when you punch him, like croissants pop out, like Eggplant was like that, just vegetables pop out.
I did not know they did that in the new, I didn't play the new Punch-Out game for the Wii, right? That's the one you're talking about?
Yeah, it's great.
That's kind of funny. A little like, I can't say that, just stereotypical, I guess that's what it would be, stereotypical. I was going to say, you can't be racist necessarily in that instance. It's just countryist. Like, this is what happens when you hit a French person. They just spit croissants everywhere.
Yeah. I think the term nowadays is problematic is the word we hear.
That's the word. It's, yeah,
problematic.
it's funny
Punch
though.
Out. It's all in good fun. We love Punch Out.
So Kevin goes into Bayou Land to chase after Duke, which leads to one of my favorite lines ever uttered in a cartoon. He pops his head out of the warp zone, which is in the middle of a swamp. So it's like he's just coming out of swamp water, and he just starts yelling, "Dookie!" That's how he like announces himself to this world. He just yells Dookie at the top of his lungs trying to find his dog, and then he says Duke afterwards. But I'm just kind of like, the writers totally just put that joke in there on purpose just to be like, this is stupid.
Yes, if the ones with Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo were on purpose, that definitely was too. This also leads into I think anyone that grew up in the 80s 90s on these cartoons leads into one of the reasons that we have an irrational fear for quicksand. There were so many cartoons at this time that like someone gets sucked into quicksand or falls into quicksand, like, oh no, I'm stuck in quicksand, which like I've never ever seen quicksand in my life, but with the amount it showed up in cartoons,
you'd think we would just walk into that shit left and right.
Yeah. Yes, the moment you let go of your parents' hand, you're just going to walk into some quicksand.
You're right. It was such a weird plot device to like scare, like as a danger, as a conflict, a way to scare kids. You're like, oh, will our hero get out of this jam this time? And even with quicksand, apparently it's the likelihood of you actually dying from quicksand if you get caught in it is surprisingly low, because it apparently only really like is a couple feet like deep or something like that. It only gets bad when you start like kicking, and then it creates more space for the quicksand to fill in more, and then you're just creating a larger pocket for you to sink in. But for the most part, you don't have to worry about it. It's just funny that's what the perception is. And when I was a kid, dude, I kid you not, like, quicksand was a major fear of mine for a long time. Like, just the idea of, like, there's just ground that can just swallow you whole. That's fucking terrifying to a kid. Because imagine, like, because then you just think, and it looks like regular ground. You can't tell the difference. And all of a sudden, it just starts eating you. Like, that's terrifying. So I remember even as a kid, I would go outside and be like, oh God, is there any quicksand over here? Like out here? Me saying that in the middle of Pennsylvania, like in the middle of the summer where it's not like there's nothing here to do that. We don't even have sand. Unless we ship it in somewhere from somewhere.
We don't even have slow sand.
I know, right? Let alone quicksand. And I did think it was interesting that I always find it weird when like TV shows will have characters fall through quicksand I find it interesting that like they do a fake out with the quicksand where instead of someone coming to save the hero, it'll be they'll just fall through and then all of a sudden they're in a cavern somewhere. They actually do that again in the next episode, and we'll explain that in more detail. So they pull that gag twice. Right. If you think about it, they pull the quicksand thing twice, but this one admittedly has higher stakes than the other. You're right. Like quicksand thing is such an, you know, what'd be fun. Let's see how many kids cartoons in the 80s through 90s use quicksand as like, or let's go back to the 70s, 70s through 90s. How often was the quicksand gag or trope used?
That is a great question. There needs to be a website dedicated to this. Like Saturday morning quicksand. .com
Saturday morning quicksand. Copyright Dexter and Josh. Yes. No one else. We're sitting on that right now. So he falls through the quicksand after looking for Duke. He falls through the quicksand and he falls down, and that's when you first see the alligator. And when he tries to, you know, fight the alligator, his power pad, which is just his NES controller, doesn't work. And he goes, oh, the quicksand zapped all of my power, which, why? Like, there's no reasoning for. No, actually, in thinking of controllers, though, one thing I noticed at the beginning of the episode when he's playing Bayou Land in the real world, he's using an NES Advantage, like the joystick, right?
Yes. This show made me want one of those really bad.
Oh man, product placement worked on you. Worked it.
Oh yes,
it worked its way with you. Whatever the. I can't speak today, dude. I am so. Dad brain is going strong right now. Oh my goodness. Well, and I always thought I thought that was weird too, though, because Mother Brain's looking like, let's see what Kevin was playing right before he got sucked into Videoland. It's Punch Out. It shows it in the intro, but in this, it's like no. It's Bayou Land. It's Bayou Billy.
Yeah, that is a weird little retcon there.
But it's like, I don't know why I don't get it. I don't get that at all.
Especially like you would see that. I feel like you would see this in a team of writers, but this is the same guy. Like you just wrote this, didn't you?
The dude. I might not have to read. Jeffrey Scott wrote the entire first season.
Yeah.
The last episode of the season, just in thinking of this, is Happy Birthday, Mega Man. Okay.
I could be misremembering this, but I'm pretty sure he wrote all of the episodes like in a week. Like he, in an interview, I think he said he like locked himself in a room and just wrote the entire season of Captain N.
In one last note about writers, the last episode of season two, when Mother Brain rules, it just says TBA for the writer, to be announced. Like, what do you mean to be announced? It's released in 1991.
Still waiting on that writer.
We still got to figure it out, man. We don't know when it's going to happen. That's so funny. That's really funny. So yeah, Jeffrey Scott wrote this entire first season. You just said he did it in a weekend?
Well, I feel like I remember reading an interview that he said, like, I don't remember if it was a weekend or a week, but like he locked himself in a room and just cranked these episodes out back to back.
He must have been doing so much cocaine.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I could think of to like crank some of this up. You know, with yes, with this set though, just in, oh my gosh, right? But yeah. with all like this kind of bad reference, with all the reference bad references mentioned, I'm genuinely surprised sometimes at how well they incorporate some of the video game stuff in this. Yeah. There's some elements where I'm like, wow, this is actually super clever and not really that bad. Like, I don't think it's necessarily the writer making the decision. There was something in the third episode, which I can't remember now, where I was like, that's actually really clever. I was pleasantly surprised by it. But in this one, it was the use of the Metroid music as they're going to the warp zone to get to Bayou Land. I was like hearing it, I'm like, this fits really well. And it's actual Metroid music. They're not just taking the sound effects, which because every lazy video game show in the 80s and 90s would just take sound effects from the games and be like, look how much like a video game this is. And it's obviously not. Like this, I actually think did a pretty good job of making it feel like it's part of a video game, even though it's like not great at it's the best that I've seen, at least in my opinion.
Which that is a great segue into after being attacked by the alligator, Bayou Billy is the one that saves Kevin and explains like, oh, that's my pet alligator. And, you know, the exposition happens and Bayou Billy agrees to kind of, you know, be the mentor for Kevin throughout the world.
Throughout you are glossing over, though.
And
I was just going to say,
you use Bayou Billy music. That was the perfect opportunity. I'm guessing that's where the CCR music comes in there down in the bayou. But the Bayou Billy music is so amazing. I mean, it's Konami, so of course they've got great music. But that would have been a great place to hear the Bayou Billy music.
They hit the mark sometimes and don't hit it other times. And who knows? I was going to say though that scene though I was trying to say is that. That's the first time you really notice like some cut scenes. Like you notice it before. Like if I watching it like a second and third time, I noticed it like in the beginning when the princess is going after Kevin to save him in Byland, and she tries to get Simon to help her. And there's some scene cuts out where she asks Simon, he goes, "I'm not going to go," and then she walks away, and he goes, "See that, Simon? She's begging. She just begged you to help." And I'm like, "No, she didn't. She just walked away." So yeah, I'm pretty sure that's a scene.
Cut line or something.
I guess so. But in the scene you're talking about where you first meet Bayou Billy, that's the first scene you really see like what we mentioned before where there's no backdrop. It's just the cell of the alligator being animated. And you see that and all of a sudden it cuts to Bayou Billy holding the alligator. And it's like they are in the middle of a conversation that started like 5 minutes prior and you're just hearing it all now. It's very strange. It was very disorienting when I first watched it. I think I even mentioned it in the last episode. It's just one of those things where back in the 80s you're like, "Ah, kids are stupid, who cares?" And it really feels like that's their logic in this situation too.
Yeah, and it could be, you know, it could be cut stuff, but I was mentioning before we started recording that like I also wondered how much of this was like, "Hey, we went over, but you know, we got another Cinnamon Toast Crunch commercial, so we got to cut 30 seconds." So they, you know, they were pulling 5 seconds, 8 seconds from here and there throughout the episode. And so then it just like fits together really weird. Like things feel rushed, or like you said, it feels like we showed up late into the conversation. Like, whoa, oh, we're talking about something different now.
Mm-hmm. And it happens a bunch of times throughout this episode. Like even in the next scene with the training montage with Billy and Kevin, there's a couple times where it just feels like stuff is missing. And let me tell you that the music they chose for that is like the biggest ripoff of, why can't I think of the song all of a sudden? It's like a ripoff of a combination of like, what if Michael Jackson did Danger Zone is what it feels like.
I think that's I think they use that for a lot of their removed montage music. They keep using that. You hear track.
I've heard it a lot already in the three episodes we've watched. Or at least I first heard it in this one and again in the third one. Well, we'll see what happens with the fourth. Something that is interesting to note, though, this whole first season was produced by Haim Saban, by his animation house. And then the second and third season was done by Deke.
That's right. I forgot about that. I was thinking the whole thing was by Deke. But yeah. Well,
supposedly Saban did the music for this first season. Supposedly. Which I thought was odd.
This remade music, you mean?
I don't know. It says composers Haim Saban for season one. Apparently he's the composer for season one. Haim Saban and then Shuki Levy, which I'm assuming is also someone he worked with with Saban Entertainment.
Yes. Yeah. I know Saban is a very eccentric rich person. So
yes, he is.
He would do as far as like, I'm going to make my own music for this.
Such a strange, I mean, to be fair, this was also before Power Rangers took off. And while he did stuff around, like, Power Rangers is what made him as wealthy as he is now. And Power Rangers weren't out in the States just yet. So
believe it or not, this was before he decided to start like, you can make this cheaper. Cause I think X-Men 92 was like the big victim of his, like, I can do this cheaper. So that show suffered the most from his change in philosophy.
In a weird sense, like it's crazy how someone whose whole philosophy was like, let's make this actively worse, made such a large footprint for good in terms of kids' memories, you know, like such nostalgia for so many kids. But his whole philosophy is like, let's just make this actively worse. Like, you don't, it's kind of a weird, like, as an adult, it's a weird mixed feelings. Like, I love this stuff, but at the same time, this guy, I don't know about him anymore.
Yeah, so much of his, the things that he brought are ripe for reboots and remakes, because the franchises that he brought, or, you know, put in front of our eyeballs, basically, they're all great. Power Rangers, this, you know, like you were saying, but revisiting it, it's like, there's so much better we can do now. When you actually do try and actually do put a budget, like, so if anyone's listening that has strings they can pull, Captain N, I mean, I know they're trying. I think Hasbro owns Power Rangers now, so that's why we haven't had another movie. But,
well, there was a movie that came out like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and that was supposed to be a whole thing, but Hasbro or Bandai or someone bought them out and was like, we're going to do our own thing now. And so
that's what happens, I guess. I would like to see, though, what would be a gritty, like, if you did a gritty new version of Captain N, like, what would it be? Like, would Kevin be a guy that, oh, dude, holy shit, make Kevin be in, like, his mid-40s. And he's kind of a burnout and he gets sucked into video land. So he's this grumpy, like, downtrodden human being. Maybe he has a coke problem because it's from, you know, it's based out of the 80s.
I actually had, for those that may have skipped over the first episode, I do illustrations and artwork and things like that. And I've had this idea bouncing around in my head. So welcome to my brain children, listeners. But I'd had this idea of Captain N being trapped in video land and becoming so, like, desensitized and over the video game thing. He's now General N and, like, cannot give two craps about video games and is just, like, so heartless and, like you said, like, this grizzled.
That's kind of funny, actually. It's 40 years later and he's still trapped there.
Yeah, and, like, new kids show up. They need help and they're all like, oh, and like starstruck and like, oh my god, it's Mario, and you know, and he's like, I don't care, it's Mario. Yeah. Having that kind of dynamic,
that would be a good one too. I like that. It's almost like what they did with Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Country, how the original Donkey Kong is now Cranky Kong.
Yeah, but exactly. You know,
this is more of like an angry version of that. Dark version of that. Okay, so let's continue on with the story though. So he meets Bayou Billy after almost getting eaten by Bayou Billy's pet alligator. And Bayou Billy teaches him the ways of swampland and how to traverse swampland and how to survive in swampland. And there's a lot more of those cuts where just stuff is missing and everything. But it was interesting to see him go through and Like, I like the idea of Bayou Billy training him and showing him how to use the whip and how to track in a swamp. I thought, even though it's like really haphazard, I think as if I was a kid, I'd be like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like learning a different skill set. You know, it's all bullshit, but whatever. As a kid, it would fascinate me. So I liked that a lot. But one thing I did think was weird about Bayou Billy himself was his character design. Doesn't he look like a villain?
He does, and that might be because of the Rescuers Down Under. He's got that kind of the villain from that movie. He's got that kind of vibe to him.
But even just the animation they choose with Kevin and Lana, when you see their dead eyes, because there's no soul in any of the characters' eyes. But you can still tell from like the way their eyes are animated, like these are good characters. Bayou Billy looks like a dude who's going to steal your girl, who's going to like take, who's going to treat you, be like, here, let's all hang out together, I'll pay. And then he takes your girl off somewhere, and now all of a sudden she's dating him and you're left alone. That's what he looks like to me. He looks like a dude who would steal your girlfriend, or try to, I should say. Like, just the character design just looks like, he looks like a creeper. I'm just going to say it. He looks like a complete creeper. And it's interesting to me that his character in the show is not. He's a good guy. In fact, comes back. He rescues Duke for Kevin because Kevin's incompetent and saves them from another monster, which we'll get into, because Dr. Wily created the robot cat, the Robo Cat, to lure Duke in there, and he creates another monster, which I think you mentioned last week is a very Power Rangers-esque thing. I wonder if that's the... Dude, did we even put two and two together that Haim Saban did Power Rangers?
Yeah.
Oh my god. My mind is just blown right now.
So, I think my favorite part of the episode, despite the King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard trying to get into Bayou Land... my favorite moment actually is when King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard are trying to go after Kevin, and they actually find a fan boat like for the traverse the swamp. But a little trivia here for you: King Hippo actually weighs ? According to Punch-Out statistics. No, they don't know how much he weighs. He weighs an unknowable amount. So he just crushes the fan boat when they try to get on it. And Eggplant Wizard's idea is to strap the fan to King Hippo, and he rides him through the swamp. And it looks as amazing as it sounds, if you haven't seen it yet. I need a t-shirt with Eggplant Wizard.
It's worth watching just for that.
Yes, I'm going to, because of the way time travel works with recording podcasts, it's probably the thumbnail for this episode. If I'm able to isolate this image from the episode, I just love it so much. I want a t-shirt. If I wasn't scared of getting tattoos, I'd want a tattoo of Eggplant Wizard riding the fan boat King Hippo.
All across your back, shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, the visual is humorous enough, but him, like the actual action of it is great, as well as they chase after Kevin and Billy on the swamp. It's amazing.
Well, it's funny too, is that at that point though, Billy isn't with Kevin. Basically, Billy says, "I've taught you everything that I can now." That's my bad Bayou Billy impression. I've taught you everything that I can, so you just gotta go find Duke or whatever. So he goes to find Duke. And he's searching through the swamp, and that's when, like you were saying, King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard do that ridiculous thing. But so Kevin dodges, they're like, there he is, and they try to run him over, and Kevin dodges it, and then there's another alligator. So he jumps on top of the alligator, grabs a vine from off screen, and puts it, like, almost loops it into the alligator's mouth. So he's holding both sides of the vine, and he's like pulling back on the alligator's head while the vine is in its mouth. If that makes any sense, that you can, like, if you can picture what I'm talking about, props to you, because I'm having a hard time explaining this.
Yeah.
But, and then he goes, somehow, alligator, what a concept.
the power pad, like, someone had this visual. I'm guessing the writer, Jeffrey Scott, had this visual of using the alligator as a jet ski. because otherwise, no idea. And for some reason, pressing the B button on his power pad creates the thrust, and it becomes a chase scene. So there's no jet skis in this jet ski chase. It's King Hippo as a jet ski and an alligator as a jet ski.
And all the time this is happening, back in Metroid Land, Mother Brain commissions Dr. Wily to create a monster that will go after Kevin. And the whole thing, like the Robocat and the monster, are tuned to Mother Brain's brainwaves. No, I was thinking about this when I was rewatching the episode this morning, because when he creates the Robocat, one of the things he says is like, and his bad German accent, that like this like kind of offensive German accent Dr. Wily has going on. He's like, it's tuned to your brainwave, your brainwaves, Mother Brain, to your thought patterns or whatever. And one thing I kind of love, for how dumb it is, and not just this cartoon, but so many cartoons from the 80s and 90s, is the bullshit pseudoscience that they throw at you, where they're just like, I tuned this robot to your brainwaves so you can control it just by thinking. And as a kid, you're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I follow that logic.
It checks out.
And as an adult, it's like, you follow the logic because they explain it clearly, but you know, like conceptually, it makes no fucking sense. It's so flawed, but you don't care. But as a kid, it's just like, I wonder how much bullshit science I believed because of stuff like this in cartoons, you know? Like, I wonder how much of it was just like, what, you mean that's not how brainwaves work? What are you talking about? That's what I learned from Captain N. Duh.
Yeah, and I have to say that the first time when the monster shows up in Bayou Land is like one of the commercial breaks. It like comes out of the water.
And yes.
It's screaming, Captain N! But I watched that like three times because I was laughing each time. But every time I thought it was just going, like just screaming. And then I was like, oh, it's playing Captain N, like in this weird screech. And I was like,
see, okay. It's funny. I heard Captain N right away. But like the way it's delivered is so comical. Like, it's not terrifying in the slightest. It's just, I can't describe it. I'll put that. There's going to be a lot of sound clips in this episode, I think. There's a lot of stuff that's worth listening to in its entirety.
I just think that now all I think of is that poor voice actor blowing out his vocal cords for Captain N.
I mean, voice actors have had to deal with that. I mean, I feel bad for any voice actor in Dragon Ball Z.
That's true.
I heard. I don't know if this seems more like an urban legend, but apparently the voice actor for Goku passed out in the recording session for when Goku was going to Super Saiyan 3 because he had a yell for so long. There's no sources that have confirmed that. That was like basically a playground rumor.
But that feels very like that could be possible.
I know. I think that's what's so funny about it. Like I could picture that. That's possible. I could see that happening.
But take from that what you will, but that feels like that could be legit.
So the monster goes after Kevin, or Captain N, goes after Captain N. And while all of this is going on, Princess Lana and Simon are also searching through Bayou Land for Kevin. And you once again find out more of a reason why Simon's a douche and an idiot. He thinks he can track and he can't. He thinks a cat is part of the dog. He thinks a dog is part of the cat family. Princess Lana takes over. Kevin and her, they find each other and get captured by Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo. And that's when the monster shows up. And luckily, Bayou Billy comes in at the last second with Duke, and Duke frees everybody. And Bayou Billy, basically, you know, Kevin's blaster doesn't work because they got swamp gunk all over it, as he says. And Bayou Billy's like, just use what I taught you. And go get what is it called? The not the Rye Star. That's a game. What is it called? The star. Do you remember what it's called?
Bang Star, Blast Star,
something like that.
Yeah.
And something that's never been mentioned in the episode before. Something that's never talked about.
Yeah.
So
cut for like a Lucky Charms commercial or
yeah, it has to have been because I have no idea what else it's from. So they, he goes to get it and it destroys the monster, destroys King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard escape through the portal, through the warp zone, and it ends up in Mother Brain's lair. And that's how they thwart Mother Brain's plans on this episode, is by this whatever star, which I can't think of the name of it. It's going to bother me.
Now, I know that during because the cool thing about Bayou Billy, other than, you know, like if the difficulty was normal and not ridiculous, one of the cool things about it is it would go between like beat 'em up stages, like your Double Dragons or your Final Fight. And it would also have shooting stages where it's first person view and you could use the zapper and shoot bad guys that were popping up. Now, I know that there were little star items that you could shoot, and I think those like cleared the screen when you would shoot those. And I think that that's what they were going for in this episode.
I don't think he called it the power star, right?
No, like I said, I think it was like a B word. I thought it was like blast star or
Bang. Well, listeners, you're just going to have to go watch the episode for yourself and tell us what we couldn't remember in the comments.
I thought it was actually kind of a cool concept that the star followed all the bad guys around, and it even followed Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo through their warp because it needed to wipe out all the bad guys, you know, that were there. And by it following them in there, that's when it takes out Mother Brain, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm. But obviously not permanently, because she has to come back for the next episode and the following episode and the episode after that. And is Mother Brain the villain of the entire series? Like, that's always who they're going to be fighting? Okay. Mm-hmm. I figured as much. I didn't think they would add someone.
I don't think they ever had a Lord Zedd. I don't think they ever
had. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, did I ever tell you that I actually got to meet the voice actor for Lord Zedd?
What? No. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was in passing. It was at a convention, so I didn't get to, like, meet him, but I got to, like, see him at panels and everything. So I guess meet is too strong of a term. But unfortunately, he passed away a couple years ago, but his name is Robert Axelrod, and he was the voice actor for Lord Zedd. Dude was the sweetest, like, so it's the craziest thing. So when you hear Lord Zedd, you think of Power Rangers, you know what I mean? Like, this really gruff, like, angry voice. His voice is high pitched as hell. Like, if you talk to him, he's like, he's got a very frail old man voice, and he's very calm, and he's very just kind of pleasant. And he was really old. He was hunched over, like he walked with a hunch. So like the visual like mismatch of hearing how Lord Zedd sounds, and he did his Lord Zedd voice. Lord Zedd versus him is just so weird. And I remember it was at one of the first conventions I ever went to, and it was him, another voice actress named Trina Nishimura, and I want to say Johnny Young Bosch was there at that convention. The voice actor for Vash the Stampede from Trigun, if anyone has seen that show. Johnny Young Bosch is he's also Ichigo in Bleach. Like, he's one of the big, he's a bigger voice actor in the anime scene. I can't remember if he was at that one or not, but it was definitely Trina Nishimura and him and one other voice actor. And Uncle Yo, who's a comedian, was there. And he was kind of emceeing this. And they were doing Whose Line Is an Anime. And it was just Whose Line Is an Anime, but anime styled. And they did a props game. And so everyone's going in. If you've seen Whose Line Is It Anyway, you know, there's a box of props. The performers will go in, grab a prop, and have like a little 1 second joke to see how much of a laugh they can get out of the audience. Robert Axelrod, most of his stuff was very like not the humor that younger kids were looking for, you know, like, you know, kids in high school and college. It was a little bit too tame for them, but he had one where we weren't expecting. He was nice, but it just, you know, it wasn't as funny as what the others were doing. He comes out with this deformed looking hand. It's like a glove and he's wearing it, but it makes his hand look like a claw and it's all like gross. It looks like a demon hand. And he goes into his Lord Zedd voice and goes, "Anybody want a hand job?" And the whole, the because for the whole thing he's being so tame with his jokes, and all of a sudden he drops that and literally everyone on stage started losing it. Everyone in the crowd started losing it. Like, I'll never forget that moment. He was just such a nice guy. And it is a real shame that he passed away a couple of years ago. I'll actually look up when he passed away. It was 2019.
Oh,
he passed away in 2019. It'll be 2 years ago in September. I saw the convention I saw him at. It was in 2008 or 9, and he was born in 49, man. So he was in he was either 71 or 70 when I saw him.
Wow.
Or 69 or 70, excuse me. So like he was already way up there, which if you think about it, that means he was in his like 50s and 60s when he did Lord Zedd.
Wow.
Dude's a legend. He was in the Digimon movie too. Sorry, I just saw it on his IMDb. Yeah. So yeah, Robert Axelrod, if anyone's interested, check out his stuff. Because he was so nice and he was such a sweet guy. He's in Akira as well. Wow. He worked right up until he passed away too. His last movie was Induced Effect, which I have known nothing about, but it came out in 2019. Don't see anyone that I really recognize in it, but anyway, so yeah, that was my meeting sort of with Lord Zedd.
Lord Zedd minute with Josh.
I know, right? Well, it's the only minute you're going to get because that's the only story I got about him. But he was very nice. He was very sweet though, and it's just the weird contrast of hearing what Lord Zedd's voice is and hearing his actual voice. It's so jarring. Like you see that with other voice actors, you know, like all of a sudden they go into a voice, you're like, oh my gosh, you're that character, but you don't look like the character I know. It's more jarring than that, because this is a frail, he walked slow, he had a hunch, and you know, he had a really high voice, and all of a sudden he just goes, anybody want a hand job? And you just lose it. It was a great time.
Voice actors have the best stories.
I really wish I got to meet him again. He seemed so sweet. But in any case, any final thoughts, Dexter, on episode 2 of Captain N?
How's by me? I ruined the joke. I thought it was fine. It was what my childhood remembered of the show, but seeing it as an adult, I think that the first episode was better, and I think that the next episode coming is better. So it was
really fun. I actually don't like the next episode as much as this one.
I thought the next episode was great, and I think that it, and I don't mean that in a way of like Citizen Kane great. I mean that as like as in like that was entertaining.
So bad,
it was
it's bad, great. Yeah,
but it was entertaining.
We'll get into it. We're actually going to be a little behind the scenes shenanigans. We're actually going to record the next episode right now, so that way we can bank a couple. But okay, so you overall you enjoyed it, but it wasn't the best one you've seen.
Nah, yeah, average.
I kind of agree. I think I like this one more than the next one, but so far the first one's my favorite. I don't know why. It's a lot more watchable to me. I overall enjoyed it.
Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo, though. If you're a fan of those two, great episode for those guys.
I think in general, the writing for Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo is surprisingly decent. Like, I'm not saying it's like groundbreaking, but a lot of their jokes, I think that's what I was going to say. What I was thinking about earlier, their jokes in the third episode, which we'll get into next week, or sorry, actually it'll be a month when you guys hear it, because we're only releasing these once a month. But some of their jokes I was impressed by. But last thing I'll say about this episode, and it's not necessarily about this episode, but about this show, at the beginning of the episode, for the intro, in the intro song, where you see Kevin getting sucked into Videoland, and he grabs on to like the wall mount for the drapes, and it breaks off and he falls in, he goes whoa, right? I consider that the Wilhelm scream of the 80s. Because how often do you hear a sound like whoa, especially in old cartoons?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's got to be the Wilhelm scream of the 80s.
I can support
for those
that.
Who don't know what the Wilhelm scream is, you should Google it, because it's a sound effect you've probably heard a lot, and you might not know that you might not notice it.
You could probably almost guarantee, if anyone has seen at least 10 movies, you've probably heard it in at least one of them.
Oh, and sorry, one final note. I actually had notes for my second watching of it. During the training montage with Bayou Billy, they knock on a tree and a hairy arm pops out and gives them a med kit. So, food for thought.
Yes. They did it before Majora's Mask.
Good lesson to learn.
Yeah.
The what, sorry?
I said that came before Majora's Mask with the hand in the toilet.
I did not take the same leap you did with that, but I see the connection now. But all right, so that will do it for this second episode. That's a good place to stop off, hand in a toilet. That'll do it for this second episode of the Captain N series. Dexter, thank you again for joining me. Where can the good people find you online?
Oh, you can find me on Instagram, Dexter_Morrill, DEXTER_MORRILL. That's two R's, an I, and two L's. I'm also on Instagram, same name. I don't think I've got an underscore in that one, though, somehow. But yeah, I'm on there. I'm sharing my artwork. I like to share lots of video game history stuff, all those kinds of things. So if you're into that, and which hopefully you are if you're listening to this, hit me up. I'll be on social media.
All right. And as for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to reach out to me, you can email me StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, there's a couple different ways you can do that. Probably the easiest way for you, and honestly, probably the most beneficial for me, give it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, because that helps more people find the show. If you want to support me monetarily, though, you can go to patreon.com/StillLoadingPod, even just $1 a month. Shout out to my $5 patron, Kevin, so I'm assuming his name is Kevin. And if you do that, for the people on the $5 level, I'll give you a shout out in the episode. I actually have to rewrite all my patron stuff because I don't remember. I don't have any good rewards just yet, so I will rework that. In any case, the most important shout I have, though, is the Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that will do it for episode 2 of the Captain N series. Dexter, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, sir.
And we will see you all next time.